Great. Hey, thanks for those of you who are tuning in to the Rural Collective's podcast called Gospel Nobodies. We are glad to be obscure, unknown people spreading the fame of Christ in forgotten places. And we're thrilled that you have joined us. Our intention here is to talk with rural church planters from around the globe who are doing it. And today my guest is John Beam. He is in Oh, where are you, John?
Wailua.
Wailua.
Wailua, yeah. The north shore of Oahu. Yeah, I told you, trying to pronounce Hawaiian names, it's like trying to read through the Old Testament names. Just let the professional handle that.
Yeah, so anyway, my name is David Pinckney. It's my privilege to be a strategist with Churches in Hard Places, ministry focused on rural places called Rural Collective. And I'm sitting in Concord, New Hampshire. And I got to visit with John and a few other Acts 29 church planters about 18 months ago, and a guy by the name of Dane and another brother by the name of Justin. And as we were launching this podcast, John immediately came to mind because I think he's a model of what it looks like to practice sustainable church planting in rural places. And so, John, why don't you tell me a little bit about where you're at, the town, the population. When you plant, a little bit about just a little demographic, biographic stuff.
Cool. Yeah, so we're on the north shore of Oahu, a small town, about 3,500 people. We're currently, our population is declining, which is a little bit concerning, but kind of cool because we like the country, right? We the less people, the less crowded, the better, which I love it. But we also want to see more people moving because it's a sign of health. But the North Shore, the community where I'm at is actually historically a farming town. I wasn't a part of it, but a lot of sugar was being manufactured here from sugarcane. Old school plantation, just kind of farming community. Now it's home to a bunch of kind of millennial hippies who just love the country life. Smaller population. The majority of the people who live here, it's a diverse, and by diverse, I mean it's more of an Asian and white diversity here on the islands just as a whole. A pretty diverse culture, with mostly young people living here, young families.
And so as I visited with you and got to know a little bit about your context, so for those of you who are tuning in, John is your typical bivocational rural pastor. He's got a side gig. Actually, it's a major gig. He's a contractor. And a little bit about that, John, and how that fits into your life and how it fits into the mission.
Yeah. So I'm not technically a licensed contractor. Oh. I think on paper, I'm considered a handyman.
Okay.
But I do, I do a lot of, I could build anything. I do a lot of different projects, but that has been my story from before planting. I was in construction, and then as I planted, I stayed in construction to help pay the bills and continue to work in construction. Cost of living in Hawaii, I think it's like the second or third most expensive state to live in, or even region to live in. So, it's hard to make it out here. And
average cost of the house in your town is what?
Around 700,000.
Oh my heart.
Yeah, it's in like the mid sevens.
So you're a unique rural place, and you know what I was impressed with you is you enjoy your work as a contractor or handyman. Let's keep that straight. And I remember, and I don't know if you said it, but the way I understood it is it's part of your missional engagement or footprint in the community.
Is that right? Yeah, big time. Being in the workforce in general, I think it helps you, it forces you to rub shoulders with all kinds of different people. And then in a small town, you're rubbing shoulders with the same people, the same different tradesmen, on different jobs, which is cool. And it's also what the neat thing. So I'm self-employed. I don't work for I work for myself. So I take the jobs that I
And your
want.
wife, Jansen, sometimes you work for her too.
Oh yeah, I definitely work for her and
I should
make
mention
sure
John's married to Jansen and they have a couple daughters, right?
two girls and a boy.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yep, they're all under five.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So we're not that busy, you know.
I hate to be the old guy that says, you know, we had five kids and yeah, just roll with it. And once you're outnumbered, it's not a big deal. And kids are the only thing you take to heaven with you. So never mind, we're not talking about parenting and not talking about family planning here. Talking about church planting in a rural place. And we're talking to John Beam from, Wailua. Is that right?
Yeah, Wailua.
Wailua. Hey, I got it. Wailua on the north shore of Oahu, an island of Hawaii. And the church you planted, Harbor Church, is part of a
There you
family of
go.
churches,
Awesome.
right? And it's great to have your daughter. This is good. This is what rural is like. We expect to have kids in and out. So,
So let me, I apologize. I can't assure that privacy. This is our door right now. It's a drop cloth. So we just bought almost a tear down home. Girl, guys, you gotta leave, please. Daddy needs
And
to
I see that master
chat.
bathroom's behind you is not quite done.
It's almost done. It's framed. Got some
Okay.
plumbing in there.
There you go. There you go. So back to your planting experience, you planted out of an existing church or a family of churches, correct?
Yeah, so we're a semi-autonomous church plant. So we were sent out by Harbor Church, Honolulu. That's our family or Ohana. We're Ohana of churches. There's four of us.
Ohana, that's means family.
Family, that's right. So we're a network of four churches. We're all semi-autonomous. We have regular or monthly elder meetings where all the churches, the church elders come together to catch up, to just pray together, talk about just vision. And so what's cool about this, especially so being bivocational, is we do a lot of we're pretty much synced up with our preaching schedule. So I with being bivocational, the question always is, how do I manage my time? You know, how do you work and then lead a church?
Right.
And with my context, I'm basically leading two things. I got my construction business that I'm trying to keep going, and the church that we're still planting, which.
Let me just dive in here and say part of this, because again, you raised a question like, how do you manage your time and how do you get everything done at the church? But because you're part of this family of churches, a number of things that guys would typically think about, like a web page or you know, even like the preaching calendar, and you were doing some collaborative preaching, that's sort of lifted off your shoulder a bit, right?
Oh, big time. Yeah, that's what I was gonna, what I was gonna explain a little bit, is I try to, I mean, I lean on, these guys as much as I can. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel in any way. This works because we have the same vision, the same ministry philosophy. The way that gets implemented obviously is different for each context, each community where we pastor our churches. But what is so helpful again is being able to do collaborative sermon prep, or even doing a preaching schedule together. I don't have to do a lot of that, to be honest. I'm more just leaning and kind of going with. I give a little input with where our congregation is at. But God's been good to us, to all of our churches in, obviously his word is, living and active, but we've seen that regularly as we just kind of look ahead and plan what books we're going to preach through. And it's been timely for every congregation, which has been super cool. But,
John, what are you preaching right now? What are you in a book?
yeah, so we're finishing up Second Timothy. I'm actually behind behind the rest of the churches because of the COVID stuff. We had
Okay.
a we just I just changed up some things, and we're currently homeless as a church, so we're actually meeting at a farm under a tent.
Oh, I love Hawaii.
Yeah, it's been cool. But yeah, we
Let me push a little bit into the sermons thing, because guys who are tuning in and watching this, so I'm part of a preaching collaborative with the only other Acts 29 church in New Hampshire. We're on the same preaching schedule, and it's great in the sense that even though I'm preaching my own sermon, we in our case, we weekly get together and talk through what the text is and what where we might be leaning towards structuring the sermon. And I find that just to be so liberating. And it feels like you have a study assistant, because you're not like you're not doing everything on your own.
yeah.
That's the same with you guys.
Oh, for sure. I'm not the most creative guy, and so one of the things that I love is the exegesis, the hermeneutics of sermon prep. That for me, that just comes easier. Not that it's easy or anything. It just I'm it's just more natural for me. And so the question that we get to throw around a lot in our when we're doing our sermon prep together is okay, so how do we apply this, and in what ways are we gonna make this text come more alive and relevant for our people in general. And so that part has been super helpful. And like you said, I love it. I just love having study partners
Have you
who
been
are
doing that since you planted what in 2014?
we were doing it off and on. And now that we have four congregations, we've two churches have been planted, and we've adopted another church. They've kind of come into the Harbor fold. And so now that there's four of us, we've just really taken to this model. And we just we it's a relief of all of us, right? Because we get
Yeah,
to come
yeah.
and yeah,
I
so
think there's something biblical about sitting around discussing the Bible as how would the Lord want us to teach us? I think there's something really good about this. By the way, if you have any questions you want to shoot our way, we'll spend the last 10 minutes just enter them into. I think you have the chat option. If you have questions or things you want us to comment on, again, talking with John Beam from Wailua, Oahu, Hawaii, town about
perfect.
3,400. Yeah, I'm almost ready to move there, at least for 6 months of the year, and I'm in Concord, New Hampshire. But as we've been talking, and a thing that really inspired me about John was this idea that both in the financial world with being bivocational, he is doing something in contracting as a handyman building things. That enables him to provide for his family in a very affluent culture, as well as have a missional footprint in the community. But now he's talking about the sustainability of being by yourself in a small setting. Your church is how many members?
Man, we were just kind of hovering around the 40s for the last couple. We've been, yeah, it's been around that for a couple years since COVID. We've really dwindled down a lot. I think we're probably having around 25 adults on average coming on our Sunday gatherings now. Yeah, that's
I think we're all experiencing that with COVID. I mean, I haven't heard of a ton of churches, and this is rural church planting, right? Like, we understand that 25 people or 20 people or 80 people, whatever, gathered around Jesus, being taught the word of God, being sent out on mission, being the family of God. I mean, that's what the church is. And part of the joy of being in rural ministry and being a part of the rural collective is being able to celebrate and validate this is just as godly and holy and valuable as being the pastor of a church of 500 or 5,000. So good for you, John. So you've been at this since 2014. You got 25 adults showing up now after COVID, and that's certainly, that's God honoring, and you're pastoring your people. You're part of this church family. If guys were to ask you, like, What are you excited about, or are you feeling like, are you, as a pastor, are you feeling like fulfilled? Are you feeling like what you're doing is long term? You could do this, I won't say indefinitely because there's a time stamp on your life. I don't know if anybody told you that, John, but yeah, if they were asking that, well, how would you respond?
Today, I love it.
Today, you love it.
Yeah, no, so
It's not Monday, right?
yeah, we're Wednesday, and we just found out. So in Hawaii, it's we kind of been living day by day, wondering whether or not they're going to close down churches again, the state. And so we just found out yesterday that churches are essential. But yeah, so I'll just kind of give a quick little history. So we planted 6 years ago. It's been a slow, rough, uphill battle living in a very transient community. People coming and going. Like I said, we've never had we've never really bounced above 40 people consistently at our church.
Okay.
And so for the first 3 years, that really kind of tore my soul up. Just being. I feel like as a church planter, there's this pressure, right? You gotta grow, you gotta become self-sustaining within 3 years. Going into it, however, in our community, I knew this was going to be a much larger, longer endeavor. It's
Sure.
going to be an uphill battle the entire way. We unfortunately, my community is very territorial amongst the churches. I
No.
remember hearing this guy an 89 some 89 little TED talk say how he planted his church. He went around and introduced himself to the churches and asked if they're for them to pray about people that they might want to send to help them plant. So I tried to do that, or I was intending to do that, and a couple of the pastors told me the exact same thing, which is basically go plant on another part of the island. So it's been territorial. It's been a long, slow grind. For just that's just been our story, and we've seen other guys plant, and they've just kind of grown, and that what made my soul bitter. And just was like, man, how long are we gonna keep doing this? So that was probably honestly the first 4 or 5 years, actually. And so year six, I've gotten to this place where I've just kind of went back to the original vision and understanding that I had of our community and what it was going to take, and that it was going to be a long, slow process of earning trust and respect in our community. And so I've embraced it. I'm proud to be a pastor here on the North Shore. I love what God is doing, and yeah. So I've been just been content with where I'm at as a bivocational pastor, and I think this is probably my calling for maybe another 3, 4, 5 years. I don't know if we're going to be sustainable financially as a church. I mean, I've been blessed with my job, with my work. We give over 10% of annual giving at our church. So
So you're
we're
not just
if
giving your tithe, but your giving makes up 10% of the church's giving income.
yeah
Yeah,
yeah
yeah.
so I mean that's huge for just a huge chunk for our church. And so I enjoy it. I enjoy again, like I said, rubbing shoulders with different contractors, tradesmen, and different jobs. I enjoy employing people part-time, or for when I get bigger jobs. And another thing that it's forced me to do too is to want to raise up more guys who could preach. So when I get a bigger job, it's gonna, if I'm remodeling a kitchen and a bathroom, that's gonna take me 2 weeks. And so I'll try to get at least one of those weeks covered. So I'm not having to prepare a sermon that week. I can just work, and then
Yep.
the rest of the month or month and a half, I can just focus on being a pastor. And it's a rhythm that I think I'm finally figuring out. Going back to being a semi-autonomous church, I don't know how long I don't think it's sustainable to be bivocational without having a solid support underneath you for sermon collaboration. I mean, they do our graphics for bulletins. A lot of the administrative stuff is taken care of. I don't have time, nor do I have a desire to do the administrative.
So let me circle back around to that, John, because I think a lot of guys who hear about church planting in rural places and consider, well, how am I going to provide my family? And then I'll talk to them about buying. You know, bivocational is noble, and you know, and let me affirm, you know, the reason I love having you on here, John, is because you are content and excited, and you feel called to what you're doing, and you've come to that place of not getting beyond, like, you know, our job is to be faithful, let God handle the fruitfulness of what happens from it, and so now you're in this place that you're just content doing what you're doing. I've got a question here that someone threw in here is talking about your schedule. Like, what does it look like? How many hours are typically you're doing in each? But I want to affirm you publicly saying you're an inspiration, that you're content, you're excited about what God's doing, you love your people, and yet you found this rhythm, which I think a lot of guys need to understand. You found it because you're in a family of churches and you're not doing everything. Because burnout and isolation, to me, are the real killers of rural planters. And you're not going to face that, at least as long as you're in this family of churches.
100%. Yeah,
and
I wouldn't be
keep
here.
Dating Jansen, you know, make sure you're taking her out and taking care of her, your wife.
Yeah. Yeah, so with the kind of the time thing is, it's scheduling and planning ahead is a little bit difficult because the nature of my work, right? Some I'll go a month without working, either because there's no work, or I just made enough money the prior month so I could focus more on the church. And so I just kind of have learned to be flexible with my time, but with the just having the family of churches that we are partnered together, especially with preaching, that's really helped to free me up in a lot of ways. Not just the Sunday planning this each Sunday, but even ministry during the week. I've kind of tried to get the church in this place like where it's this kind of this automatic ministry wheel, to where we just set them up. We got our community groups, and we do this thing called journey groups, which one of the pastors at our church learned from a 89 guy in Australia. I think they might call them different, but I'm trying to just get our church on this rhythm of discipleship and being in community during the week, and to where I'm not needed as much in the church, because I don't have the time, because like you said, I want to guard my family time. Years ago, my wife and I, we just kind of settled with, we're not going to have any more than 3 nights a week devoted to ministry stuff. So we've tried to guard that as much as we can. Some weeks are different.
Let me break in a time out right there and just say that is golden. I was given that counsel probably 20 years ago, and it's no more than 3 nights out doing ministry. I think that is the max. I'm glad to hear you say that. So I'm sorry, continue. Just there's certain things I just want to highlight, because what you're saying has so much, there's so much wisdom to provide for other guys who are considering planting in rural places and have to consider what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have that. We try to guard our family time. Again, I have 3 kids. I love being a dad. So I will always, that's kind of in my DNA. Fortunately, I had a good dad growing up. And so I think that has passed a love for fatherhood onto me.
Yep.
So I just, you know, love being I'm a family man, before I'm a pastor. And, that's just comes naturally. I didn't have to be taught that. And so, really just try to guard that. And, I'll say this too. I think what's really freed me up, and it took me, almost 6 years to learn this. I think the whole rural collective and the vision of what you guys are trying to do for rural church planters is to communicate that church planting doesn't it, it's very different in our context. It's gonna the process is probably gonna look a lot different than what guys in urban areas are experiencing, their vision, their rate of growth. And so once I kind of accepted my context and that this is just gonna, it's just gonna look different, the growth rate is gonna look different, or even our kind of maturing as a church just looks and functions different from churches in larger cities, we'll probably be a small church forever, because we're out in the country.
And as long as it's a healthy church and you're in the, you know, in the community with the gospel, I assume you, when you have a baptism, you get to do it in the ocean. Is that right? But,
yeah.
Oh, golly. Never done an ocean baptism, but, in the summer we can hit the river, but, so you bring up a unique thing about sustainability because you're part of the family of churches, the Harbor churches, but the mother church, I understand, is rather large, correct?
Yeah, I think there's around 300 to 400 people. So it's not that large for Hawaii. For, you know, being a church that's not just Reformed, but gospel centered, preaching expositional sermons, that's a healthy number. We live in it's a very, I think the state, we're not a large state at all. There's just over 1 million people across the whole island chain. But most of the larger congregations are very charismatic, not gospel centered, and, just, they've kind of had the heavier Christian influence on the islands for well over a century.
Wow.
On the island. They've been very generous. They support us financially, and as far as I know, they're just going to continue to support our church, support me financially. But again, we live in a very expensive state. I got to make over six figures just to survive here, and so I have, you know, for my family. It just I can make way more money than my wife, who, you know, was a preschool teacher before we had kids. And for us, it works. We wanted my wife to stay at home and raise our kids. That's just, you know, what something we value for our family. I'm not saying that's what everybody needs to do. I don't want to, you know, stoke that fire. That's just what we're about. And so it makes sense, and I like doing it. I can do both because of the nature of, again, it all comes back to the support that I have with these churches.
So, I think this is really good for rural guys who are considering planting, but also for existing churches in suburban or even urban areas who you may have somebody in your elder group or in your sphere of influence who feels called to a more rural place that might be 30 miles out of the city or out of the suburban area, and there's a way that you could plant in this model that John is experiencing that can be really sustainable. And while the numbers aren't going to attract a lot of attention from tabloid Christianity, the fact of the matter is, if the gospel of the kingdom, if the knowledge of the glory of the Lord is going to cover the earth as the waters cover the sea, these small places need gospel communities. They need gospel preaching. And one of the ways that I see your model being replicated is when even, you know, a church of 300-500 in a more suburban area or urban area can say, hey, we want to be a part of church planting in rural places. And so I would urge anybody who wants to follow up and talk with John about how this model of family of churches can help plant rural churches, contact John. Harbor Church North Shore, is that right? somewhere like
Yeah,
that.
Harbor Church. Yeah, Harbor Church, North Shore.
Yeah.
Can I just say one more thing too?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think for rural communities, right? These are communities where families have been there for generations, and so in our context, and I don't know if this is true for you and anyone else who may be listening, but we're a transient culture as well. So working a job, owning a home, that just instantly gives you more credibility with long-term residents, to where if some guy just kind of parachuted in and he wasn't working a job in the community, or that just gives you a whiff of suspicion, right? People are not going to open up to just relation naturally, right? Because you don't want to build something where it seems like it could be unstable. And so I would say that's another thing for a value. It doesn't have to be long term, but if you're just getting started planting in a rural town, rural community, appearance and building credibility, I think it's good to be intentional about knowing what how you're gonna engage the community there and how you're going to be viewed by them. So if you can, show, where do you work? Oh, right down, here, it's in the community, or where do you live? Or I just bought a place. Those are signals, right? That is going to immediately give people that you're meeting, wanting to reach, a sense of just that's going to give you credibility in their eyes, right? Because you seem like you're there,
yeah,
or you've been there, so. I'd say that's just another value for us rural guys.
John, that's really golden. And I really appreciate how you're making it look not easy, but doable. And that's part of our role here is to say that God, if God calls you to a small place, it's doable. You have to think outside the box. You have to think differently than if you're being called probably to a suburban or urban place. You have to figure out what works for you. You also have to figure out what works in your context. I love what you said about, so you're both in a highly transient area, but you have these older family, that have been there a long time. And so the idea of holding down a job and living in the community is essential. And I think that's true in a lot of places. Listen, we're coming up on the end of our time together. Any last words or any thoughts from scripture or from just your experience that would help our brothers being a good dad's part of it. I love it. It's good.
I don't know. I think it for me, just accepting that rural planting just looks so different.
Yep.
There was one year, and so I'll just speak frankly, it has nothing to, I love Acts 29 Network.
Yep.
Again, I wouldn't be here without the network and the support and the encouragement and all the aspiration that they provide. But there was one year where I just didn't want to go to our regional conference just because I think it was year four into our plant, which I feel like I have nothing to show for in light of all these other, everything that's happening with all these other churches. And again, I think probably years 3 through 5 were super difficult for me. Just, cause I was doing the thing, I was comparing, my church planting experience and, with what was happening, with all these other guys. And really, not only was that fleshly, right. That's just, my own pride. And I love how Acts 29 talks about that a lot, in keeping that in check, but just finally come into a place where I just had to, or not had to, I just, well, I did have to, but I finally accepted and was proud that I get to be a planter in a rural context. Yeah. And it's if the guys, if church planting is sexy, in the urban suburban areas, I'd say, well, that's not me anyways. We're gritty. I'd say rural planters are a gritty bunch.
Yeah.
Versus yeah. being a sexy bunch. I don't know if there's probably, I might tick some people off who are in urban areas, but that's how I,
Call John,
Sorry.
you'll reconcile. But you know what? You're speaking the language of rural planters. And in our so kudos to Act 29 for launching Churches in Hard Places and Urban Planters. What's happening in planting urban churches in among poor communities, and then this rural collective thing. By the way, it's not rural collective. Not something you join. It's just an expression of a very broad, diverse church planting family. And but what we're talking about hasn't been talked about. And I noticed, all my life, I've been pastoring 34 years. Oh my goodness, almost as long as you've been alive, John. Maybe it's
Almost there.
33.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, going to conference after conference after conference and hearing these success stories and the big church pastors and all that, one of my goals, and don't know if we'll ever see it, but is that when we get a conference together, I have heard some of the best preaching coming from rural pastors. But because of their size and obscurity, they're not part of the speaking team on a conference. And that's okay. That's not like we have this agenda. But what you're saying is coming to peace with God's call and your context, and that's good. I mean,
Yeah.
that is the will of God, and there's nothing. I just love validating that you're doing the just as essential work as Tim Keller did in Manhattan, and John Piper did in Minneapolis, and whoever, in whatever city, you're doing just as valid and important ministry because you're being faithful to the call of Jesus. So. Thank you, John. It's been a joy to build a relationship, even though it's only been one time meeting you face to face. And if anyone watching this wants to reach out to John with questions about bivocational ministry, being part of a family church for sustainability, or even the coming to peace with being in a small context that may never have more than 40 people. I'm sure he would love to chat with you as he fits it in between his building things and pastoring and being a dad and husband. So thanks, John.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Okay.
Fun
God
talking about
bless,
this
and
stuff.
hope to see some of the folks later on in another episode, I guess, a podcast of Gospel Nobodies. God bless.
All right. Aloha.